stands her ground, she cannot be driven from the field. She must either conquer or be conquered. But some say, only to the immortal gods is given virtue and the happy life. We can attain but the shadow, as it were, and semblance of such goods as theirs. We approach them, but we never reach them. Reason, however, is a common attribute of both gods and men. In the gods it is already perfected, in us it is capable of being perfected. But it is our vices that bring us to despair. For the second class of rational being, man, is of an inferior order. A guardian, as it were, who is too unstable to hold fast to what is best, his judgment still wavering and uncertain. He may require the faculties of sight and hearing, good health, a bodily exterior that is not loathsome, and besides, greater length of days conjoined with an unimpaired constitution. Though by means of reason he can lead a life which will not bring regrets, yet there resides, in this imperfect creature, man, a certain power that makes for badness, because he possesses a mind which is easily moved to perversity. Suppose, however, the badness which is in full view, and has previously been stirred to activity, to be removed. The man is still not a good man, but he is being molded to goodness. One, however, in whom there is lacking any quality that makes for goodness, is bad. But he in whose body virtue dwells, and spirit ere present, is equal to the gods. Mindful of his origin, he strives to return thither. No man does wrong in attempting to regain the heights from which he once came down. And why should you not believe that something of divinity exists in one who is a part of God? All this universe which encompasses us is one, and it is God. We are associates of God. We are his members. Our soul has capabilities, and is carried thither if vices do not hold it down, just as it is the nature of our bodies to stand erect and look upward to the sky. So the soul, which may reach out as far as it will, was framed by nature to this end, that it should desire equality with the gods. And if it makes use of its powers and stretches upward into its proper region, it is by no alien path that it struggles toward the heights. It would be a great task to journey heavenwards. The soul but returns thither. When once it has found the road, it boldly marches on, scornful of all things. It casts no backward glance at wealth, gold and silver, things which are fully worthy of the gloom in which they once lay. It values not by the sheen which smites the eyes of the ignorant, but by the mire of ancient days, whence our greed first attached and dug them out. The soul, I affirm, knows that riches are stored elsewhere than in men's heaped-up treasure houses, that it is the soul and not the strong box which should be filled. It is the soul that men may set in dominion over all things, and may install as owner of the universe, so that it may limit its riches only by the boundaries of east and west, and, like the gods, may possess all things, and that it may, with its own vast resources, look down from on high upon the wealthy, no one of whom rejoices as much in his own wealth as he resents the wealth of another. When the soul has transported itself to this lofty height, it regards the body also, since it is a burden which must be borne, not as a thing to love, but as a thing to oversee. Nor is it subservient to that over which it is set in mastery. For no man is free who is a slave to his body. Indeed, omitting all the other masters which are brought into being by excessive care for the body, the sway which the body itself exercises is captious and fastidious. Forth from this body the soul issues, now with unruffled spirit, now with exultation, and, when once it has gone forth, asks not what shall be the end of the deserted day. No, just as we do not take thought for the clippings of the hair and the beard, even so that divine soul, when it is about to issue forth from the mortal man, regards the destination of its earthly vessel, whether it be consumed by fire, or shut in by a stone, or buried in the earth, or torn by wild beasts, as being of no more concern to itself than is the afterbirth to a child just born, and whether this body shall be cast out and plucked to pieces by birds, or devoured when thrown to the sea dogs as prey. How does that concern him who is nothing? Nay, even when it is among the living, the soul fears nothing that may happen to the body after death. For though such things may have been threats, they were not enough to terrify the soul previous to the moment of death. It says, I am not frightened by the executioner's hook, nor by the revolting mutilation of the corpse